What I have as a reading is really a story, which I'm going to try and tell without my manuscript, since some of you keep telling me I ought to do more of that. We'll see whether you're happier or not. But it is an old Buddhist story, okay, interpreted through the brain of me. Once upon a time, a man went to the Buddha looking for help for all his problems. He had heard that the Buddha was enlightened and so surely would have the wisdom to help him with what ailed him. He sat in front of the Buddha and started to talk about his wife, who was cranky a lot of the time. The Buddha listened and then said, "I have nothing to offer for that." So then the man started talking about his kids, who did not go to school and did not pick up the trash and did not do the things they were supposed to do and were just such a deep disappointment to his heart. Buddha shook his head. "I cannot help you with that problem, my friend." And so the man talked about his employees and how he was really afraid that they were taking two-hour lunches and it just wasn't right because his business was going to fail. "I'm sorry, my friend. I can't help you with that problem either." And the man kept talking. And he talked and talked and talked till he went through all 83 problems on his list. And after each one, the Buddha just shook his head and said, "No, I'm sorry, I cannot help you with that." At that point, the man was quite angry, felt like he'd been duped, and said, But you're the Buddha. You are the enlightened one. How do you have no wisdom to offer me?" And with that, the Buddha looked up and said, "I never said that. I have no help for your 83 problems because there are always 83 problems in life. I can help you with the 84th. "The 84th? What do you mean 83 isn't enough? The 84th? Don't tell me this." "Yes, my friend, you think you shouldn't have any problems at all. This I can help you with." Okay, so maybe 83 problems is really stretching it. I mean, only a devoted complainer could come up with that constant a high. But I hope that Buddha's point was clear. No matter how glorious some of our days can be, problems are just part of life. No one escapes them for long. Joy and woe are woven fine, a clothing for the soul divine. It's right, and it should be so. We were made for joy and woe. And when this we rightly know, through the world we safely go. Get it? Life is hard. Not because we're sinners, not because the universe is out to get us, not because we've done anything wrong or need to be taught a lesson. Life is hard because life is hard. We all know that. We just don't like it. We'd actually prefer a much different vision. Don't worry, you'll have more time to see the slide. You can read them all. We'd prefer a different vision. A place of abundant delights just for us. Completely calibrated to our own desires and needs and dreams. A life as beautiful and restful as a garden, a life of ease and plenty. We do our best to handle that. I mean, think about your own life. There's certainly stuff spelled with a capital S, illness, death, loss of a job, a divorce. These can rattle our universe and leave us stunned, stalled, as if we're sitting out our own lives. But face it, there's the other stuff too. A long list spelled with tiny S's. Too much of that at once, too much coming on too fast, can just the same knock you down and knock the wind right out of you. It's really true. You know what happens. And what we do makes all the difference. Whether it's a big S or a list of little ones, most of us know to reach out. We get help. Sometimes the help of experts, doctors or lawyers, but most often we lean on each other, on those we trust, on the ones who love us. They have the power to hold us through these traumas in our lives. They listen, and it calms us, drains away enough anxiety that we can think again. They soothe us and help lower the fear that makes us want to run away from whatever it is that's plaguing us. They give us the energy, the strength, not to spend too much time hiding in a pint of ice cream every night or letting that occasional glass of wine turn into a daily bottle or 16 hours at work. You know, in their willingness to hold us in their hearts, to take something off our plates, these folks befriend our souls. And memories of companions like these. And from your faces, I can see the memories are in your heads right now. Memories of their kindness and care stay bright forever. Life without them would really, really be too hard. But the deeper our gratitude grows for those who gave and helped so very much, the clearer most of us become that we really had to get through all on our own. Healing from our traumas, coming back to a life that is whole again, attaining equanimity and some measure of ease is in the end only something we can do for ourselves. And it is deep soul work, much of it wordless. It follows its own rhythm, does not have a predictable path. It actually is a matter of faith, not theology, faith. One way to know and nurture the faith we each have is through the stories we tell ourselves. These stories are our most basic ways of understanding who we are, what the world is, and what role we are called to play. So this morning, I want to tell you some stories. Stories for you to learn, or if you know them already, stories for you to remember. Keep them for the days when you might need to feed your own soul. The first one is an old Taoist story. And it starts out eons ago in China with a farmer who has a small plot of land and a wife he loves. His wife dies giving birth to his son, and the farmer is left to raise him all on his own. The boy grows up strong and intelligent. And his neighbors every year come by and compliment the father. What luck he had to have such a son, always helpful, strong enough to do good work. And the farmer would nod his head and say, maybe I'm lucky, maybe I'm not. We'll just have to wait and see. One day, the son left the gate in the pasture open, and the farmer's one and only stallion got loose and ran away. The farmer and his son went to look at the gate and found that it really wasn't the kid's fault. The latch hadn't worked. And they were sitting there mending the latch when all the neighbors came by because they'd heard about his terrible luck. They came to commiserate, to try and make him feel better. The farmer just went on with his work and said, "Maybe bad luck, maybe not. We'll have to wait and see." 2 weeks later, the stallion came home, but not alone. There was a string of 20 wild horses just running right into the pasture, this time with a gate that really did lock. When the neighbors heard about this, they came running. "What incredible luck you've had!" The farmer just said, "Maybe good luck, maybe not. We'll wait and see." Well, the son, who by this time was a strong teenager, decided that he was the one to break the horses, for his father was getting old and a fall could be dangerous. And he did quite well at the work until he got on the back of the biggest horse, who bucked and threw him, and he broke his leg. His father heard his cries, came out to the pasture, gently picked the boy up, took him into their hut, and put splints on his leg. The neighbors heard and came by, and oh, they were so sorry. What could they do to help? Such terrible luck. How could he survive? The farmer said, "Maybe it's bad luck. Maybe it's not. We'll wait and see." 2 weeks later, as the boy was getting better but still not well, the emperor's army came through the village and took away all the young men for a war that had just begun. When his leg healed, the boy helped his father with the horses and the harvest and went to help all the neighbors whose sons were gone. Good luck, bad luck, wait and see. I told you this story because I think it helps. You see, most of us, whether that stuff is in small letters or large, most of us, when it first comes, ask, "Why me? Why now?" I mean, it makes us feel so shaken. We feel like we need an answer just to regain some control. Is it bad luck? Is the world really against us? Is it a penance we must pay or a lesson to be taught? This farmer didn't get caught up in all that. His wisdom was to just say, "Wait and see." Instead, he did the immediate, the practical, the kind, and let the larger meaning arise in its own time. He managed to control what he could and just leave the rest alone. This is mindfulness, the mindfulness we learn sitting on the cushion, put into life, into action. A mindfulness that leaves room for and takes comfort in what we cannot yet know, and leads to a reminder that nothing is permanent at all. This is a story out of the Jewish tradition. Now, I first heard it in a UU chapel as Sunday school as part of our Sukkot celebration. That's a holiday that ended about a week and a half ago. I have no idea if that is when the Jewish tradition actually tells this story. But because of the way I heard it, I figured it was in the Bible. It's not. And it explained how King Solomon got so very, very wise. No rabbi I've found has ever made that claim. I still think I'm right. King Solomon decided he wanted to play a trick on his prime minister. And so he called him forward and said, "I have heard there is a ring that makes sad people happy and happy people sad. I want this ring, and I ask you to go and find it for me. You have until Sukkot to bring it and put it in my hand." Now, King Solomon knew darn well there was no such thing as a ring like that. He'd made it up that morning. But he liked to make sure that no one in his cabinet got too full of themselves. And he thought that prime minister needed a little taste of failure and humility. The prime minister took his task in all seriousness. He went to every jeweler in Jerusalem. He went to every jeweler in Israel. He asked the same question over and over again. "There is a ring that makes sad people happy and happy people sad. Have you seen it? Can you find it? I have any amount of money you need to buy it for my king." And every jeweler said, "What? No, I mean, I could try and make some, but no, never heard of that." The months went by and the festival was almost about to come. The prime minister was worried what would happen if he walked into the king's chambers without the ring. On the day before Sukkot was supposed to start, he found a jeweler working in a poor section of town. He went and told him his problem, and the jeweler said, "Oh, sure, I got that." And he went into his pack and pulled out a very plain gold ring, nothing special at all. And then he took out his engraver's tools and wrote something on the inside of the ring and handed it to the prime minister and said, "Give this to your king." Prime minister tried to pay him and he said, nah, it's not an expensive ring. Take it. I'm happy for you to have it." The next day, as the court and the king and his family and all the ministers were joining in the feast of Sukkot, the prime minister walked in. King Solomon said, "Aha! Have you got my ring? The ring that makes sad people happy and happy people sad?" He was sure that the prime minister would make excuses and feel embarrassed and hide. All the courtiers were sure, too. Hey, gonna take him down a peg. Show him a thing or two. The prime minister reached into his pocket, offered up the plain gold ring, and just said, "Here, your majesty." King Solomon, who liked to play along, picked up the ring, put it on his hand, and said, "Well, this doesn't work. This is a great day. I'm really happy. It's not making me sad at all. You've been duped, Prime Minister." The Prime Minister only said, "Read the words inside the ring." So King Solomon took it off and looked inside. The jeweler had written four words: "This too shall pass." The king's smile left his face. He said thank you to his prime minister. He put the ring on and wore it for the rest of his life. That's how King Solomon became wise. What do you think made him wise?
Don't expect it to be permanent.
Don't expect it to be permanent, yeah. In the Jewish tradition, it's that joy follows sorrow, follows joy, follows sorrow. None is permanent, and they dance in a rhythm all their own. This too shall pass. Everything changes. Those four words can get you through a lot, too. They can be the root of endurance, of persistence, of discipline. And they can be a powerful antidote for our culture's quick fix attitude. Now this is one of the more dangerous illusions that I think are floating in the air we all breathe. It's the idea that we as grown-ups ought to be able to snap back quickly. I mean, a week or two after the funeral, the healthy among us should already be back at work, back to normal, right? That when the ink on the papers is dry, the divorce is done and life moves on. We all know hearts do not heal on anyone else's schedule. They need the time they need. And grief often feels like a hole ripped into our cloth. But getting over it isn't just a mending job. Healing is never about fixing things up till they're as good as new and getting back to our old comfortable selves. Instead, we become a different self, a self who knew the loss and lives in a new way now. Yeah, life goes on, but no one in this room and no one that you know needs to be as tough as that myth suggests. Remembering that joy always follows sorrow can inoculate us all from our culture's message. And for those of us who aren't grieving, it can also help us be better companions to another person's soul. For when the tears come at some unexpected time, when they rise up decades later from a grief that seems like it might be a lifetime ago, we can protect those folks from worrying that something's wrong. Knowing that joy and sorrow have a rhythm all their own, with our presence, with our words, we can help them see that their sadness is but the shadow of love, and their tears are the song of an open and a strong heart. This too shall pass. Mostly. Although sometimes the troubles in life just can't be solved. Sometimes the way through is only through a change in ourselves. This is a story from Ethiopia called The Lion's Whiskers. Once upon a time, there was a woman who married a widower. The widower had a son about 8 years old. And the woman, who had waited a long time to find one she loved enough to marry, had longed for a family. She very much wanted this son to be like her own. And she knew that since his mother had so recently died, that at first he might not want her quite so much. But she married and moved into the house and did all she could for the boy. She had no idea how much hostility that kid could muster. She made him food, he threw it on the ground. She got him nice new clothes, he stomped them under his feet. She asked him to do something, he pretended she wasn't there. The more he resisted her attention, the harder she tried. Special meals, fancy clothes, all sorts of treats to turn his little heart around. She wanted so much to love and be loved by him. But nothing worked. Finally, she was so desperate, she went to the witch doctor who lived outside the village. She went and told him her whole story and said, "Please, do you have a love potion I could slip into his soup that would make him love me?" "Oh, big problem that," said the witch doctor. "Requires big medicine, too. I could make a potion. But first, you must get the ingredients." "Anything, anything, what is it? Tell me what you want. I want this so much." "I need the whisker of a lion." "Oh, okay. I mean, they did live in the jungle, after all. I saw one on my way over here. I'll just... No, no, no. The lion must be alive when you take the whisker. The whisker of a live lion? She was quite frightened. She knew all about lions. She'd lived in the jungle her whole life. You get angry, they get angry, you get in their way, they eat you. This was no small task. And yet having her stepson love her was the core of her life. She went home and devised a plan. That night, she went out into the jungle, taking with her a bowl of meat. And she put it in a clearing where she thought the lions might come. She moved back from the clearing and waited all night, watching. A lion did come, a great big lion with a huge mane and long whiskers and very big teeth. And he came and sniffed the bowl and looked around and ate it up. So the next night, she went back to the same clearing and put the bowl a little closer to the edge. She snuck behind a bush and waited again. Same thing happened. The lion came out, ate the food, and fell asleep. For a month, every night, she took a bowl of meat to the same clearing and waited for the lion. And every night, she moved that bowl just a little closer to the bushes where she hid. Finally, one night, the bowl was very close. The lion came, ate the meat, smacked its lips, and showed off its great big yellow teeth. And she was close enough to see it all. He settled down to sleep. She waited a bit more. And then, when she was sure it was really sound asleep, she snuck out and with the scissors snipped off a whisker, backed up slow and quiet, turned around and ran. Ran right back to the witch doctor's house. Here, I've got it, I've got it. Yeah, you do. Give it to me. And she did. He took it and threw it into the fire and said, I've got no magic for people like you. Go home. She was so angry, she had no words. She walked home. She walked home. She had braved a lion, and it had all come to naught. She walked home and did what she always did. She made dinner and washed the clothes and took care of her family and helped her friends. She did nothing different. She was as kind as she'd always been to her son, but just kept thinking, I have braved a lion, and this doesn't matter at all. About 6 months later, her son, just as he was going to bed, surprised her completely. He ran up and threw his arms around her neck and said, you're not my mother, but I love you too. Thank you. Some problems really do heal themselves. If only we discover the wisdom to get out of the way. That stepmom really needed to stop trying in order to have anything change. And that's true in our lives too. Often we make the difference by hanging in there, by going the extra mile, by doing everything we know and then some. Except for those days when it doesn't work at all. Maybe then it really is better to let go and do nothing. Nothing special, nothing new. My last story is a contemporary one, written by a guy named Edwin Friedman, who is a rabbi and a family systems therapist. And it has some wisdom to offer, I think, for those times when the trouble coming at us is not ours alone, but seems to belong to everybody. Now, that everybody can be your household, your whole family, a congregation like this, or maybe even, Friedman would say, a country itself. This story is called Dominoes. There was a row of dominoes standing in a long, narrow line that circled back onto itself. If ever one lost its balance, all would have trouble keeping theirs. And now and then, something happened that made them shake, and some seemed a little more tipsy than others, but no force that touched them ever went beyond each individual's domino's ability to rebalance. And so the dreaded, unstoppable chain reaction, which each knew it was powerless to reverse, never started. Until one day, the day it happened. It started with number 10101. 10101 teetered, shook, pivoted on its corner, righted itself, and then fell flat against its neighbor. Its neighbor, 10100, was taken so unawares that it immediately fell against its neighbor. And that sequence repeated itself at least several hundred times before all the dominoes recognized the dangerous state of their condition. As the process continued, some gave in without a fight. Others pretended, well, it's not really happening. A few became so anxious that they fell over before it was their time. As the wave persistently moved on, each domino mobilized all of its energy to hold up or push back its falling neighbor. It was to no avail. The continuing felling force was just too much for each individual domino's weight and size. The very nature of their existence worked against them. To hold up one neighbor would have been difficult enough, but to fight the accumulating momentum of all those dominoes behind it was out of the question. The attitude of those standing and watching was pretty uniform. Each asked itself what it could do to fight this plague-like process proceeding inexorably toward them. Some tried to calculate the power in ergs of energy as against the rest, mass of their own weight. Others wondered if perhaps some aerodynamic innovation could be conceived to drag this juggernaut to a halt. Still others considered the possibility that they could help their neighbors stem the tide if they could bring their own strength to greater, unimagined peaks. And several thought of sacrificing themselves for the greater good by falling before their turn, in the misguided hope that such an action would in effect create a fire line whose gap the coming conflagration could not bridge. But inevitability prevailed, and it was becoming increasingly hopeless to think that anything or anyone could arrest the course of these events, when suddenly things stopped. At first, there was shock, then relief, and eventually, all the dominoes began to focus on the point where things had turned. What had happened? Who had stopped this pernicious process, and how? All that could be seen was a domino no different in shape or weight or color or density or any visible characteristic at all. The entire line was agog, How did you do it? They all wanted to know. What formulas did you use to check it? What did you come to see about its essential nature? How did you calculate its proper measure? What did you see that we didn't? I don't know, said the domino that hadn't been dominoed. All I can say is that while each of you were trying to hold your neighbor up, I got really worried that I find a way not to go down. In Sunday school and in sermons, we're all taught that caring for each other is the way to heal and create a peaceful life. Friedman says, sometimes not. Sometimes caring for others isn't the most effective way of getting us through the problems we know. Sometimes the best thing to do is look at your own toes. Are they planted well? Can you stand where it is right to have stood? Life is hard, but there is strength to be found in the stories we tell ourselves and tell each other. Remember these. Wait and see. A lion's whisker, a ring, a domino. Remember these for the day when you need an antidote to a problem all your own.